between Jay Krishnamurti and Professor David Bohm of London University at Brockwood Park, England, on October the 7th, 1972. It has been included in Krishnamurti's book entitled The Awakening of Intelligence, which was published by Victor Gollancz Limited, London, being Chapter 11 of such publication. End of identification.
I thought I'd just say a few things I've been thinking about intelligence, and then we could go on from there. Well, you see, I always like to look up the meaning of the word and its origin. And so, it's very interesting. It's the origin is inter legere, which means to read between.
Legere,
to, as in legible. And the it seemed to me you could say that the thought is like the information in a book, and the intelligence has to read it and read the meaning of it. And I think this gives a rather good notion of intelligence.
To read between the lines.
Yes.
Yes.
And to see what it means. And there's also another meaning given in the dictionary, which is mental alertness.
Yes, mental alertness. Yes, I
would. Well, and of course, this is very different from what people talk about usually when they measure intelligence and so on. But now, and then considering many of the things you've said and some of the excerpts that George has made, you could say, see, intelligence is not thought. Now, you say thought takes place in the old brain. It's a physical process taking place, you know, electrochemically. I mean, it has been amply proved by science that all thought is essentially a physical, chemical, electrical process.
Yes.
Now, and then we could say intelligence, you say, is not of the same order. It is not of the order of time at all. Right?
Intelligence.
Yes.
Yes.
Intelligence reads this thought. You know, it sees the meaning of it. And now I thought we could start on this question that, there's one more point. You said that it's essential for the old brain to see its limits.
Quick.
So that it stays within its limits, you see, and doesn't make trouble. Now, and of course, the thought tends to keep on worrying a question, unless it's really deeply seen that this question has no meaning. The thought may tend to keep on at it, you see. Now, I think one of the questions which arises is something like this, that, you see, you can say thought is physical, now, and then the mind or the intelligence, whatever you want to call it, seems different. It's of a different order. So would you say it's of that there's a real difference between the physical and the intelligence? Or
That's what... Are we saying that this that thought is matter? Let's put it for the
moment. I'd rather call it a material process.
Material process, all right. Thought is material process. And what is the relationship between that and intelligence?
Yes.
Mm. Isn't that it?
Yes, and it raises many questions which would be important for science.
Yes, yes. Is intelligence the product of thought?
Well, I think that we can take for granted that it's not.
Right? It's not. Why? Why do we take it for granted it's not?
Well, simply because, see, thought is mechanical.
Thought is mechanical.
And intelligence is not.
Yes. So thought is measurable, intelligence is not. And how does it happen that this intelligence comes into existence? If thought has no relationship with intelligence, then is the cessation of thought the awakening of intelligence, or is intelligence being independent of thought and therefore not of time, exists always?
Well, that raises, you know, many difficult questions.
Yes, I know.
So I would like to put this in a sort of a framework of thinking, how one would connect up whatever we're saying to any scientific views that may exist.
Yes, sir.
either to show that it fits or doesn't fit. Or,
yeah, yeah.
And now, so you say intelligence may be there always. And
I'm asking, yeah, is it all?
It may be, and it may not be.
Yes, yeah.
Or it's possible that something interferes with intelligence.
You see, there is this, I think the Buddhists and the Hindus, if I'm right, have the theory that the ancient Hindu, the theory that intelligence or Brahman exists always. And it's covered over by illusion, by matter, by idiocy, by all kinds of mischievous things created by thought. I don't know if they would go as far as that.
Well, yes, that we don't actually see the eternal existence of intelligence.
No. So they say, peel this off. That thing is there. So their assumption is it existed always.
But there's a difficulty in that, in the word always, you see.
Yes, I know. It is, yes.
Because always implies time, you see.
Time, that's right.
And that's just the trouble. I mean, that time is thought. That thought, I would like to put it, that thought is of the order of time, or perhaps it's the other way around, that time is the order of thought.
Thought, yes.
That thought, in other words, thought has invented time.
Yes.
And in fact, thought is
time. Is time.
Because, I mean, well, the way I see it sometimes is like this, that thought may sweep over the whole of time at one moment, but then it's always changing.
Yes.
So without noticing it,
quite.
The thought is changing physically.
Yes.
For physical reasons, that is.
Yes.
Not rational reasons, not, you know.
Rational and irrational reasons, yes. Yeah. Yes.
But the reasons are not having to do with something total.
No.
But they have to do with some physical movement in the brain. Yes. And therefore, this thought is mechanical.
Depending on environment and all kinds of things, yes.
Yes. So therefore, the meaning, as thought changes with time, its meaning is no longer consistent. It becomes contradictory. It
yes.
changes in an arbitrary way.
Yes, I follow that.
Right. So now then, of course, you begin to think, well, all right, everything is changing. I change, everything changes. But then one begins to think, I am in time, and time is extended and becomes vast. You see, the past before I was before, further back and forward in the future.
Right.
And you begin to say that time is the essence of all. Let's say time conquers, and time conquers everything. You see, at first the child may think I am eternal. And then he begins to understand that he is in time. So now the general view that we get to is that time is the essence of existence. You see, which I think is not only the common sense view, but also most of the scientific view.
Yeah.
And this is this is very hard to give up, you see, because it's an intense conditioning.
Right.
In other words, it's stronger even, I think, than the conditioning of the observer.
And the
observed.
Right. So are we saying that thought is time, thought is measurable, thought is can change, modified, expanded, and intelligence is of a different quality altogether.
That's right, a different order.
Different order, different quality. So can you talk to me about my idiocy, my illusion, my peculiar tendencies, without the conscious mind interfering and saying, "But please don't touch it, leave me alone." You know, they tried subliminal propaganda,
yeah.
Advertising quickly, so that you don't really pay attention, but you're conscious, so you buy that particular soap. We are not doing that. That would be deadly. What you are telling me, said, look at the tree and, or the cloud or that picture on that wall. Forget. Don't listen to me with your conscious ears, but listen to me with the ears that are that hear much deeper. That's how I listen to you this morning. Because I'm terribly interested in the source. Yeah. But you are.
Yes.
You follow, sir?
I understand, yeah.
And I said, but you will come to that. And I'm really interested in that one thing. And this is all will be explainable, easily understood. But to come to that thing together, freely together. It's no, you follow? I think that's the way to break a conditioning, a habit, an image which I have cultivated. No, you don't talk to me about, I don't know, talk to me at a level where the conscious mind is not totally interested. I don't know if I can sound silly, but you understand what I'm saying, sir? I say, for instance, I have a conditioning.
Yeah.
You can point it out a dozen times. Argue, see the fallacy of it, the illusion, the stupidity. I still go on. I resist it. I say, no, it should be. What shall I do in this world if I don't? All the rest of it. But you see the truth that as long as mind is conditioned, there must be conflict and all the rest of it. So you penetrate or push aside my resistance and get to that. Get the unconscious to listen to you. Because the unconscious is much more subtle. Much more quick, because it's not, it may be frightened, but it sees the danger of fear. Much quicker than the conscious mind does. Like when I was walking in California, high in the mountains, I was looking at birds and trees and watching everything, and I heard a rattler, and I jumped. It's the unconscious that jumped, that made the body jump. Because I saw the rattler when I jumped, it was 2 or 3 feet from me, it could have struck me very easily. If the conscious brain was operating, it would have taken several seconds. I don't know.
Yes. Well, I mean, then to reach the unconscious, you have to have an action which doesn't directly appeal to the conscious.
Yes, I think that is affection, that is love. Hmm. I mean, you talk my consciousness, my waking consciousness is hard, you know, clever, subtle, you know, brittle. And you penetrate that through, say, all right, keep your beastly little stuff. Mm? And you penetrate it, you penetrate me with your, you know, with your look, with your affection, with all that feeling you have with you. And that operates, not anything else.